This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour is brought to you by CHI Franciscan Health. Thanks for joining us here on Brock and Salk. It's been a fun day. Enjoyed competing against you guys, and congratulations to Dave up in Anacortes, our big winner and of our little contest.
CJ's dad, I guess. You know, he's our old intern up there in Anacortes.
Really?
Yeah, way to go, man. All no, right. Actually, it's not.
Okay. I don't know.
But Deej is the only one I know from Anacortes.
He is.
Yes. All right. Beautiful area up there.
I want to run through a few things that have taken place and come out here on the NFL front just in the last day or so. And some are Seahawks specific and some are Seahawks adjacent. But I want to start with Danny David Moore yesterday. They had a really good conversation. I don't think it was meant to be here, but it ended up getting into kickers in their opening segment yesterday. And Danny had written about kickers up at 710sports.com. He really published his whole spoiled milk theory. And Danny essentially thinks that once a kicker's missed twice in big spot, they're done. Like, it's like milk. Like, if you've got to give it a second sniff, just throw it out. There's nothing valuable left there, and it's not worth the risk of trying to drink it, because even if it's okay, you're going to wonder about it, and if it's not okay, you're going to get sick. So just toss the spilled milk. And I don't know. I ended up agreeing with Jim, God help me, but kickers are enormously important. They're underappreciated. We don't talk nearly enough in the NFL about the importance of kicking, but if you have a bad kicker, you're shot. You don't have a chance. Especially if you want to play the game that the Seahawks want to play, where the games are often going to be close and you've got to do the little things, etc. You better have a good kicker. The problem is, I agree with Danny as well, there doesn't seem to be any better chance of getting a good kicker if you spend significant resources on the position, whether it's money or whether it's draft picks. They went through the high round draft picks on kickers. The results are not great. Robert Aguayo was taken in, the second round a few years ago?
Yeah, and he's out of the league. Last year I saw in college.
It's terrible.
Yeah, he got cut by Minnesota.
Terrible.
Cut.
So spending draft capital on a kicker has not in any way helped. Spending big money on a kicker has not helped. You know who's got huge money last year? It was Cody Parkey.
Yep.
And he ended up missing 10 kicks this year between extra points and field goals, including obviously the one that got blocked at the end of that game against Philadelphia. So is it just random? Is your kicker just 100% randomness? I think that's hard for most of us to accept, that there's nothing you can do to find a good kicker. So what do you do? If you're not happy with what Janikowski did this year, fine. I'm not necessarily either. I thought he was okay, but the way that thing ended was sad, with him lying on the ground with a hamstring injury. The year before, we dealt with Blair Walsh, which was awful.
Mm-hmm.
The year before that, the Seahawks thought that Stephen Hauschka was kicking the ball too low, which is why he had too many blocks, and also they weren't happy with his kickoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up moving on from Hauschka. Also, they didn't want to spend big money on a kicker.
Correct.
So what do you do?
Kind of puts you in a bind and a conundrum that you would never expect talking kickers. We do talk kickers, but largely to mock them.
Right? I don't mock them. I'm not in on that.
Most of the conversation about kickers on radio, on television, is just like, they're not really football players. Well, are they a football player? Are they not a football player?
Count me out. I'm not mocking kickers. I think you mock kickers at your own peril. And I'm not saying that they're the same as a linebacker. I understand they're much more specific.
Mm-hmm.
But mock them at your own peril, because you need them. They're an incredibly important part of the game of football.
Are kickers closers?
Just entirely random, except for starting
pitchers get, you know, and have in the past $200 million deals. And its closers are just, well, you know, the really good ones and are rare, like Mariano Rivera, and is just like Vinatieri, and they can stick around until they're 45. But that's so darn rare that the rest of them, what do you say all the time? Well, yeah, Fernando Rodney, 50 saves 1 year and 10 the next. Like, you just don't know. Do you pay for them? Do you develop them? Do you take them Edwin Diaz? You know, do you take him as a starting pitcher, and all of a sudden you're going to find him and you're going to put him in that role? And is he going to be able to sustain this, or, you know, all of a sudden he gets one injury? I mean, are kickers closers and likewise paid and looked at the same way because of the volatility of it? And
closers
get
paid, and kickers generally don't. I mean, that's the difference, is that most NFL decision makers seem to think basically there's no difference between kickers A, B, and C, and so there's no reason to really pay them.
Well, I think that's ludicrous.
Well, maybe you're right.
I think our experience
the last
3 years.
But paying them doesn't seem to make them any better.
Right.
They don't seem to do better when you pay them.
Well, and then the other problem is even the evaluation. I would take every bit of their conversation they had yesterday, which was fun. It was like, wow, how are kickers this entertaining?
Because they're important.
How much of a conversation do we really have about kickers? And you start to like unpeel it, and there's a lot. And I'll say it even further. The Seahawks did what you kind of want them to do. Bring in an old guy, bring in a young guy. They're both capable. They've both kicked in this league. Mm. And then they watched that evolve, Mike, in OTAs and training camp and preseason.
I'm going to disagree with you.
And then, well, they picked the wrong guy.
Yeah, because they didn't actually pay attention to the competition. If you're trying to figure out, I thought Danny made some really good points yesterday. Danny and Jim, I think, were both on this, and I'll just disagree with Dave, which, of course, is uncomfortable because he's the one who played in the NFL. But Dave's very anti-kicker. He didn't want to really think much about them ever. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Jim. They're important. And I agree with Danny. They're close to random. So what do you do? If you're Pete Carroll, what is your mantra? Compete every day. Send him out there and let him compete. He had two kickers in camp to start the year, Jason Myers and Sebastian Janikowski. Who was better?
Jason Myers.
And who do they keep?
Seabass.
And who was a Pro Bowler and which one has his hamstring torn off his bone or whatever?
Yep. But Seabass is the one that you, in some ways, have argued for because he's not going to do it in the preseason.
Like spring training pitching numbers.
Yeah, oh, man. He's just a veteran guy.
I'm going to let you in on a secret. I might have been wrong. I'll let you in on a little secret. It happens a lot. I may very well have been wrong about that.
Yeah.
If you're Pete Carroll and this whole thing is random for the most part, why wouldn't you just pay attention to competition?
Yep.
And Danny said so much. He didn't even – week to week –
Salk is always right, and he told you so.
Not in this case. Go the opposite direction.
But you know what? That could be a new drop. Let me tell you about a little secret. I could be wrong.
It's very possible.
I think that might be one of my favorite drops.
Well,
I mean, we'll let you in on a little
secret.
Could you
have kickers compete every week, every other week, or is it important to give them a sense of confidence that they go out there and you've got their back?
Well, whatever you've been doing around the league and other places hasn't worked. So whatever kind of methodology you want, is random and as much variance as there has been, yeah, there's no textbook on picking the right guy. And ultimately, as I said to you this season, I think they went back to Brian Schneider, who had Seabass in Oakland, who knew him, who went through battles, who went through high-stake games and leverage moments and really trusted and believed in Janikowski, and the power was still there. But that was about all that was there. The consistency wasn't there. The work ethic wasn't there. Obviously, the body wasn't there. And over the course of the season, just it did not materialize in a way, as you said, for this team, man. For this team and the way they are built and the way they want to play the game, you've got to get that position right.
So are you willing to have them compete every week or every month or all throughout training camp and just bring in guys and let them go? They signed this kid Ficken, and so maybe he's an option, but they signed Jason Myers last year to the same kind of futures deal.
Or Robbie Gould, right? The guy in San Francisco who's kicked in a very difficult environment in Chicago and San Francisco that came in here and nailed it. He's not going to be intimidated by the north end zone.
But you want to spend money on that?
Yeah.
Why?
You just said it.
Well, you watched the Bears spend money on Cody Parkey last year because he was great in Miami.
Parkey hasn't done it multiple times. Parkey did it in one place, in a better environment, and went to Chicago and went like, whoa, this is a lot harder than what I've had in my past down south and other places.
When you're sitting around talking about how you need defensive ends and you're going to have to spend money on Frank Clark and how do you sign Russell Wilson to a long-term deal and what do you do with Jaron Reed? And there's so many of these. I don't know. I don't know that I want to start spending big money on a kicker. Mm-hmm. When so much of it seems random, let him compete and see who emerges.
And you know what? In San Francisco, I would take him away. He was one of their great assets this season and help beat the Seahawks, yes, making kick after kick after kick and win.
What are their great assets? How many wins do they have?
Yeah, not many.
Four?
Yep, not many.
All right, so many great assets. Here's another question if you're a Seahawks fan. You want Antonio Brown. His name came up yesterday, disgruntled wide receiver from Pittsburgh. Mm. He has been linked probably most commonly to the Niners, but there was a little bit of rumor out there yesterday that maybe the Seahawks would be a fit for him. Are they?
What did Rabel say to us yesterday on his list? And it was pretty high up on his list, right? Talk about defensive line. And then, the former wide receiver said, give me what every one of these teams left standing has. Like this 6'5 receiver that can really run and has got incredible just catch radius. Now, Antonio Brown can really run. And he's got an unbelievable catch radius, but he's an unbelievable mess from the neck up.
Well, here are Antonio Brown's yards over the last few seasons, starting in 2013. 1499, 1698, 1834, 1284, 1533, 1297. Twice in there, he led the league in receiving yards.
My answer is no. 17 million, no. That would mean Doug Baldwin would be out. You're not moving from Tyler Lockett, so, and you're also not bringing in 17 million, as Clayton said earlier, with two $10 million receivers. You're not doing that. So to bring in Antonio Brown, for any of you that have intrigue in that, that means Doug Baldwin you're done with. And you're moving him out, maybe the health situation or what have you. You could deem that any way you want. And then you say, this guy's 7 million more.
31 years old he'll be this
year. And you give up a first-round pick. No, I want the next Antonio Brown. I don't need – no, this team doesn't need it. This team doesn't need that headache. They don't need a guy that needs his touches, wants his touches, and pouts when he doesn't get his touches. So no thank you on that. But if they didn't, I'd be intrigued.
Right. You wouldn't. No. Didn't you learn your lesson with Percy Harvin?
By the way, he and Doug Baldwin are exactly the same age. They're both 30 years old. We'll play next year.
Compare and contrast Percy Harvin's stats and Antonio Brown's. Not close. Percy Harvin begged out of games. Percy Harvin had migraines. Percy Harvin
Antonio
was
Brown
unreliable.
Just skipped practice like 2 weeks ago because he was mad at his quarterback.
That's Here's right. Antonio Brown's games played after his first year when he didn't start. 16, 13, 16, 16, 16, 15, 14, 15.
Yeah.
This guy plays.
Yep.
But he doesn't win.
Well, Pittsburgh's been
pretty
good.
No, this goes back to an old Tom Wassel theory. The greatest wide receivers in the league don't win Super Bowls. They never do.
Yep.
You look right now, Odell Beckham, no. Antonio Brown, no.
Julio Jones,
no. Nope. DeAndre Hopkins, nope. No. Mike
nope.
Evans, no.
Nope.
Maybe Brandon Cooks this year with the Rams, but like the top tier wide receivers.
Maybe
no.
Mike Thomas.
Never.
We'll see what happens this year. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they haven't won.
AJ Green, no.
But a lot of them have made it to Super Bowl, certainly when paired with franchise quarterbacks. Julio Jones was a bad player, too. That had nothing to do with him away from going and winning that Super Bowl against New England. So
if Antonio Brown's a
Tom's
10,
right, and I generally agree, but it's not a full proof.
I don't think it's if you have that wide receiver, you can't win. But when you give that much cap space to a top-tier wide receiver, you're not going
to
win.
That's what I tend to agree
Antonio
with.
Brown's a 10. All right, he's a 10. He's one of the top five receivers in this league. He's unbelievably explosive. When he wants to, he is uncoverable in a one-on-one, and teams have to commit to him. So he's a 10. What's Tyler Lockett?
So hard.
Tyler Lockett's in that. He's this season is an 8.5-9. This season, just toe-to-toe, those situations to get on top of safety and beat them, to beat one-on-one coverage, to make tough catches, to make go-route catches, and to shield your body, and to do it in the biggest moments, and to win in Carolina because, yeah, he this year was, I would argue, an 8.5 to a 9.
It's so hard because it is, you know, because the numbers are just nowhere close, right? When you start looking at numbers, we're going through those 16, 18, 1900 yard seasons, nearly 1900
They're
yards.
They're not going to do that here.
I know. And then you see Tyler Lockett, he had his best season yardage wise this year, and he didn't reach 1,000, mm-hmm. right? He had 57 catches. How many times has Antonio Brown been over 100? I mean, so numbers wise, it's complicated. Another cool stat about Lockett, by the way, he's missed one game in his career.
Yep.
He's missed one game in his career.
Play with a big old knee brace.
It's crazy.
Right? I mean, he was hobbled out there. He played at 70%. He loves football. You know, I think Shotty told us he's one of the most intuitive wide receivers he has ever had.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think in that scale, Tony was a 10.
But does he dictate
Tyler's
coverage
a 9,
like that?
And I'm not paying $17 million.
Does
I'm
he
not
dictate
disrupting
coverage?
My offense. Yeah, he started to this year a little bit. I mean, not in the way that Antonio does, but as far as his production and when called upon, he had a record-setting historic year in the history of this league. Nobody was more efficient. His catches, his touchdowns, much like Russell, his opportunities were limited, but his touchdown passes were off the charts. So, no, I don't make the move with Antonio Brown. It's kind of cute and intriguing and is risky and all of that. We did learn our lesson with Jimmy. We did learn our lesson with Percy. You just don't need that from the neck up.
I would tend to
agree. $17 million a year.
If they want to spend big money on something, go spend it on another pass rusher.
Well, find the next Antonio Brown. Excuse me, was Antonio Brown a top 10 pick? Where was Antonio Brown drafted?
He's
was
a third rounder, if I'm
was
not mistaken.
Was he in the 15s? Was he 30? Was he second? I believe he was a mid-round pick. Go find the next Antonio Brown.
He's coming out of Central Michigan. It was like his third college.
Yep.
But yeah, he came with some baggage.
Go
but
find
right,
Tyreek Hill. Go find that guy. That is what your job is to do. You have Tyler. He is locked in. Hopefully Doug's knee isn't too arthritic or doesn't have many issues long-term. He can get another year out of him. You have those two. Go find your next one. And like Rabel, I would prefer 6'4 plus. I just think that is the variable in this offense that the quarterback can throw it up and enjoy, like Alshon Jeffrey. Go alley-oop him, man. That is the one little, you know, I think nuance in their passing. And David Moore showed flashes of it. I think you can get even bigger than David Moore. So those would be the avenues I would pursue.
All right. That's, I think you're probably right on that. And I don't think anyone's going to, I don't think that's going to happen here. It just seems sort of outside.
And eliminate my intrigue. I'm no longer intrigued.
You're
not
intrigued.
Through it. Nope.
But if he were here.
I'm not usually a verbal
You'd
processor.
At least be intrigued to see how it works if he were here, even if it's not something you really want.
I would
want.
Rip that move.
Hey, did you follow any of this thing with Chris Carson yesterday? Did you see any of this?
I did.
What did you make of this? So Chris Carson taped an interview with, Doug Gottlieb yesterday, I believe. And before it ran, the Fox Sports Twitter account sent out a tweet mm-hmm. and essentially said, Chris Carson joins us at such and such a time to talk about the Seahawks' disappointing season. Mm-hmm. Carson didn't take too kindly to that, so he retweets it And it just says 10 wins and making the playoffs ain't disappointing. Never did I say that. Now, Fox Sports went and deleted their tweet, so it's no longer out there, and obviously they felt bad about it. And that's not to say that was not Doug Gottlieb doing that himself. I mean, that's somebody else at the at their station who's in charge of all that. But 10
some
wins,
boy howdy down there.
10 wins some and making the playoffs director. Ain't disappointing. Never did I say that. Where do you come down on Chris Carson? Because, look, we certainly have said the same thing. We're not disappointed by what the Seahawks did this year. Mm-hmm. We're pretty excited by what they did. 10 wins when they were predicted to win 4-8. So that was great. They made it back to the playoffs. They certainly had a chance to win a playoff game, although they fell short. Do you want your players to believe that it was a disappointing season or that it was something to build on?
So by asking the question, are you asking this because you already have an answer on it, or are you trying to verbally process like I am?
I'm trying to I could go both ways on this.
Yes.
Because I'm not only be in the business of criticizing Chris Carson for slapping back at somebody, but hey, what are you talking about? We didn't have a disappointing year. We exceeded all everyone's expectations for us. We made the postseason. That's not a bad disappointing
Kyle,
year.
Kyle, find the sound last year of John Schneider on with us when we asked him about a 9-7
right. Nine
season.
9-7 felt like 2-14. Yeah.
We got
right?
our teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
See if you can find
and
that
And they didn't
sound.
Feel like that this year. They didn't feel they had a lot of momentum and a lot is positive, and I want them to build off of it. So I don't want to be in the business of criticizing Chris Carson. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, he should be disappointed that they're not still playing, right? In a way that all of us are. I'm not disappointed in their year, but disappointed that they're not still playing. And my guess is if we're dealing with more than 140 characters, Chris Carson would agree with all that. So I'm not sitting here trying to kill him. It just sort of struck me as interesting.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think that's totally well-reasoned. And he would say, yeah, it's bummed. I wish I was playing. But, at the same time, I ran for over 1,000 yards.
I'm really proud.
I'm proud of what we did and accomplished in this year that nobody saw this coming, that nobody thought we could, that we couldn't run the ball. And we go from the worst rushing offense in some ways, if you want to shape the numbers that way, in the history of this league, to the best offense running the football this year. And he was a catalyst for it. He was a difference maker for it. And he has a lot to be proud of and hopefully build upon. I guess what you don't want is satisfaction. Mm. And I know these are a lot of words and you can move it different ways. But yeah, here was the Schneider sound last year when we're like, well, you're 9-7, a couple missed kicks from being 11-5. And here was the GM last season.
It's just the standard that we've put in place ever since we walked in the door in 2010. We've had this partnership. Pete talks about doing it better than it's ever been done before in competition, and I talk about being a consistent championship caliber football team, and that we want our fans to be a team that the fans feel like they're in it every single year, and that's what we've done. And so this past year, you come out of the season and you look at the other teams you're competing with, and we just felt like it was a morgue around our building after the season. And we knew we had tough decisions to make, and we can't be stale. We got to keep moving on.
And they did, and they were not stale. And I guess never satisfied. And that would probably be the thing that cuts through this with Chris. Like, just don't be satisfied.
And I think that's what he would say. And mm-hmm. And I don't want to speak for him. That's not fair. I think that's where Fox Sports got themselves in trouble, trying to speak for Chris Carson. Yep. But my guess is if you were to have him on and say, hey, really? It wasn't disappointing? He'd say, well, look, the ending of it was disappointing, and I'm not satisfied by what went down. But as a season as a whole, no, it wasn't disappointing.
And by the way,
if anything, it was incredibly rewarding.
And by the way, for Chris Carson, who's had nothing but volatility in his career, right, both high school, collegiately, his rookie year, he gets injured, and this team just kind of implodes from the inside out. And all these kind of star power guys that he'd been watching while he was at Oklahoma State, like, whoa, he's out. I mean, it was nuts. So for this year, man, there was just a brotherhood that you heard talked about, all the fun that you heard talked about. And because of that, I don't think he's going to say it was a disappointment.
No, and nor should he, I think. Some text messages coming in. 9-7 combined with sour attitudes is bad. 10-6 with the playoffs and this types of players is great. Yeah, I would agree with that. Another one says it was a disappointing end to the season because of the way the game played out. But the season was not disappointing. Agreed. And then finally, how strong do you expect John Schneider's Southern accent to be in 2019? Strong to quite strong?
Yeah, right now I bet it's real strong. Right now he's in scouting season.
Right.
Right now he's getting down there. He's at the East-West game. He's on the sidelines. That Southern
He's
ball.
Hanging with the boys down there.
A lot of brothers.
Sure, right. Sure. Hey, brother, how you doing? Like, John's down there southerning it up.
But who am I to say? Howdy, can you call me out on this? If anybody because we do our podcast together,
yes,
and we've had a whole host of characters, young and old, different speech patterns, am I like the most chameleon speech pattern guy?
Oh, man, it was amazing. We sat down
with the Steve former Zaccone. Sounders guy,
yeah.
Steve Zaccone.
Yeah.
And Brock all of a sudden started pronouncing words differently, like within the first answer, the first question.
Get me around
Dabo.
Sitting
there like, oh, I hope he's not offended by this.
I'll tell you, man, at some point we've got to do a John Schneider versus Marty Smith. Like, you've got to decide who it is. You just give him like a little bit of it. Like,
this ain't no Shoney's Buffet around here.
Right. Now, is that John Schneider or is that Marty Smith? Mm. It can be hard to tell, right?
Oh, we got some better.
Down the stretch he comes, the opossum.
He ain't worried. Found him a bush to go hang out in. If I were you, I'd stay there, Mr. Opossum.
Is that Marty or is that John Schneider?
I want to hear him get on that fiddle too. Get on that fiddle.
That's Schneider, right?
I don't know.
You got it, brother.
I don't understand. Marty's from the deep south, and John's from Wisconsin,
right?
Somehow they sound alike.
I gotta go pickup truck, man.
That's definitely Schneider. Don't even try to fool me.
You know what?
Right,
we've talked, by the way. We've talked. Here's a little, here's how we do our business behind the scenes. We've talked maybe in some of these stretches, like, let's just get guests to talk to, right? Let's just get some fun people that we enjoy talking to. Why in the heck is Marty Smith on that list?
Because Kyle's been sick and hasn't suggested
it. Yeah, we gotta talk to Marty.
That's Kyle's guy.
The most dangerous animal in the South is probably a coyote, maybe a bear, but probably a coyote. And some, they're mean now.
If you ever listen to his show, Salt, Marty and McGee, you never listen to him?
No.
Kyle, you find a way over there?
I've not heard Marty and McGee. I've got Marty Smith's voice in my head all day already. Brother, Marty.
Marty. No, I haven't had a chance to hear it. Is it good?
Oh, it's phenomenal.
I bet it is. I see him on Twitter. He's funny.
Just
all right, let's get Marty on.
Okay.
You want to have Marty on? Kyle, reach out to Marty.
I enjoy immersing myself in it, bro.
Got great hair and a killer beard. That might be me.
Can we get Marty on with John Schneider? That would really maybe be the ultimate. All right. We're going to answer the question, Jerk, in about 20 minutes, so please start sending your texts in, 710-710. Powered by Coors Light. If you missed Mike Hopkins, head coach there at UW, well, stay tuned. It's around next here on Brock and Salk.
I mean, we wear cowboy boots and jeans to weddings and church, man.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Can we answer your questions in 10 minutes? It is Brock and Salk. Let's get right to this. Lots and lots to do. We got to answer your questions in 10 minutes, and I don't want to waste any more time. Coach Hopkins was on with us an hour ago. And we asked Coach Hopkins, hey, this crew, this team you've got this season seems to understand that that credit pie is a whole lot better when everybody gets a slice of it, Coach?
Yeah, there's no question. It's something that we stress. It's the hardest thing. You know, I mean, coaches talk about playing together and believing in each other and one more pass and family. And all those things are great. And it's all, you know, everybody says the right thing. It's the hardest thing to do as a coach. But I think the great thing is when you know, we talk a lot about action with these guys and really believing in each other. And when we started trying to build this culture last year, you know, it takes time and you start to see those guys starting to really believe in each other. And like what you were saying, Brock, Sam Timmons comes in for 11 minutes. He's got 7 rebounds, 4 blocks and 2 steals, like just active defensively. Galen Noel, who last year, you know, would really score, but he didn't really do a lot for others. This year it's 5 assists, 4 assists, doesn't score in that one game, 11 rebounds. Everybody's contributed. Nas Carter, you don't have to run a play for him, and he just makes it happen, offensive rebounding, 18 points. And David Crisp is starting to they're starting to find him. And so you just start seeing, like you're saying, a lot of team play, a lot of believing in each other, and when you're a great team, the great teams I've been a part of, it's just a chemistry and a commitment and a sacrifice from all, but it's all about the W.
Hmm. How important is it to have as many veterans as you have on this group?
Well, I think it's, you know what, it's interesting because they're veterans in terms of years, but they're only a year and a half under us. And so the veteran part of it is, for us, it's legacy. You know, Matisse, David, Dom, well, what's your legacy going to be? And your legacy is about winning, and what are you going to be remembered for? And I think that's kind of given them a sense of pride, of urgency, of something to fight for. And so, you know, that maturity, I think, carries over quicker than the younger guys. But I still think that there's another level to go to with this team. And, you know, we're you know, just trying to get better every day. But really proud of the guys so far.
Coach Hopkins joining us here on 710 ESPN Seattle. I'm not really sure how to ask this delicately, so I just say it. What's going on with the Pac-12?
Well, you know what? I was going through it, and I was in the East Coast for a long time, and now I'm a West Coast guy in the sense of just want to fight for the league, want to represent the league, want to represent the West Coast in a great way, because I believe I've been in the ACC, I've been in the Big East during the best years, and I believe we've got a great league. There's a lot of great coaches. We've got more pros in our league in the NBA right now per team than any other league in the United States. And so you've got the players, we've got the coaches, we've got some great programs. And, you know, I just think that right now we're under attack by what we've done. But my argument, even in the NCAA tournament last year, was we had two 11 seeds and a 4 seed. If you look at the ACC had, I think, 8 teams or 9 teams. Every team that was an 8 seed or above lost in the first round. And Virginia lost in the first round. But nobody says anything. And the key to this, the NCAA tournament, is getting high seeding. Two 11 seeds, I mean, you could flip a coin, you know, on what's going to happen. I think when you look at our non-conference schedule, a lot of teams, Utah, played Nevada at home. They played at Kentucky. They played at Minnesota. They played a lot of tough teams. We were one of three teams that played three top 15 teams. And so I think our league, Arizona, played an incredible non-among league conference. Arizona State doesn't do great in our league, but they beat Mississippi State. They beat Kansas. And so there was a lot of good for some reason. I'm not going to say East Coast bias. I'm just not. But it just seems like they just highlight all the bad, and they haven't looked at what the league was trying to do, was trying to play a tough schedule, trying to go out of its way. And, you know, a lot of times we've got to go out east to play these games. We don't get to play a lot of these games out west.
Yeah, trying to change the perception. And we talk about this a lot on the football side of it. It is hard to do, but perception is part of your deal. Right, you get voted in. Like you get voted into a playoff. You get voted into a tournament. Like, perception still matters.
And, Brock, I think a big thing is you know what, we do. And you know, that's a long answer for me, but you got to win these games.
Yep.
You know, you got to win. I mean, the bottom line, that's just what it is. I just don't like when they say it's a headline on a major studio network saying the Big East has its worst, or the ACC has, or excuse me, the Pac-12 has worst Power 5 December in the history of Power 5, along with the Big East in small print.
Yep.
You know, where the Big East is going to probably get 5 or 6 teams, and they're just talking about us maybe squeezing in 2 or 3. You know, but it all comes down to winning. Perception's part of it, but it's something that our league has to do a better job of just promoting and letting the national media understand what we're trying to do.
Coach Hopkins here with us. A year ago you joined us, and you told us a cool story about some stairs that you had the kids run out at the park, and how difficult, and just, you know, the drudgery and the demands that you put on them physically, right? That you wanted to, with your culture, you know, kind of lay that foundation down right away. Is that still being laid, or have others taken some of that, or is it still, you know, was it still a process of making sure they're putting the work in?
You know what it is. We were struggling shooting the ball. Really poor. We were in the high 200s in terms of three-point shooting. And during Christmas break, you know, we just started, we started having, you know, 3 40-minute shooting groups throughout the day, you know, outside of practice. The kids felt like we stole their Christmas, their holiday. But it's the work. It's you're constantly trying to do what? Raise the bar, raise the standard, especially when we're trying to implement a culture or championship culture. And so that goes in all areas, and it's just a process. And so it's something that we've embraced, and you start seeing the effects. You know, we go out there, David Crist is shooting well, Matisse Leibels increases three-point shooting, Nas Carter's increases three-point shooting, and it's all about work. I mean, you were a great player. You were a part of great teams, and, you know, you start to see the effects of that, building that team and that one more, that extra pass, and I've got your back mentality, and you know, it takes time to build that strong culture, but you're constantly fighting for it. You're constantly building that, You know, it's funny the way that we trained in the preseason. We got to that Colorado game late in the game, and you started to see the effects of the altitude. You know, I know we never mention it, but you start to see long minutes, Utah, Colorado, you see their faces, and then we put them in the huddle. I'm like, this is why you did all your work. You know, I said different words, but this is why you did your work. It's for these moments. We've got to be tougher. We've got to be mentally tough. We got to be together. And, you know, it wasn't pretty, but they found a way, and then we were gritty down the stretch, and we got the win.
No, we appreciate you cleaning up the language here for our radio audience at 8:40 in the morning. I know you're all exactly. I know you're all in on UW. I know that you're doing a great job here as the head coach. I sure hope you notice, though, what your former team, place that you were for a long time, did what earlier this week at Duke. How about Syracuse winning at Duke when Duke was the number one team in the land? That's no joke.
Well, you know what? It's funny. I went to Australia once a long time ago as a player. I think it was 1990, 91 with Rick Barnes, Big East All-Star team. And, you know, we saw kangaroos for the first time. And you could go up and pet them. And they were, you know, incredible creatures. And the park ranger basically said they're also one of the most dangerous animals because you put them in a corner and their legs are so strong they just rip something apart. And so the other night I was, you know, I've been around, you know, Jim Boeheim was my mentor and coached with him for many years. And I actually watched the game against Georgia Tech and they struggled and they didn't play well. And, you know, it happens. It's league play. Teams are playing above their potential. And I knew coming that Monday at Duke, after having a home loss like that, was going to be the kangaroo in the corner. And the kangaroo in the corner mentality. And you know, been in that locker room many times behind the scenes after a loss like that, and I know how great programs and great coaches respond, and they did. Wow. And they went down there, and we had our practice, and that was the bummer about a 4 o'clock practice because it was a 7 o'clock game or a 6 o'clock game, whatever it was. I couldn't watch it, but going to my, I kept getting updates from one of our GAs, and you know, incredible win.
Yeah.
That was Mike Hopkins on with Brock and Salk earlier this morning. Just recapping, Brock heading back into the room right now. He's just so popular.
Oh, sorry, Miss Lydia. It's Tom Wassel and I deep dive in the discussion as Tom is going to join us for Answer the Question Jerk. And we need those questions. You can text those questions into 710-710. Remember, the 9 a.m. hour every day now, powered by and thank you to CHI Franciscan Healthcare. 710-710. Text questions. Tommy and I will answer them next.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
That's my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Thank you, Miss Lydia. You did not have to do that. You went above and beyond. I'm going to write up above and beyond for you for taking care of business. Well, that was very kind of you.
Did you suggest heart songs? Is that what the problem
was? No. She absolutely nailed when I was late. You and I were doing a deep dive in numbers.
Yeah.
And our interview ended. It was like, where's Brock? Wassel's distracting him in there. Here they're talking numbers. They're geeking out right now. And she carried the load while I was absent. So I had to run in here and... She nailed it, so thank you,
Miss
Lydia.
We're just a team.
You
team.
Did?
Yeah,
we're
she
team.
Did.
That's awesome.
She didn't blame me, didn't point the fingers. She just crushed it.
You could, though.
Thank you. Oh, she easily could have. Howdy will. I'm sure Howdy's going to run and tell Kyle and Salk, who had to run out of here for a big old meeting. So aren't you, Howdy? You're going
to
go tell
him. I don't
have
to. It's on tape, Rob. Yeah. Jerks.
Yes.
What are you more excited by? A made half-court shot at the end of a game or a Hail Mary?
Is my team involved in both scenarios?
Yes, your team wins.
Oh, half court.
Oh.
I'm assuming we're talking about the Indiana Hoosiers, so yeah. Anytime they win a game, I'm pretty excited.
Are you a Butler
excited.
Fan, by the way?
No.
Butler Bulldog
no.
fan?
Nope. Nope. Hate them.
They're from Indiana.
I know, I don't like them.
I mean, they had a half shot, right, to win the national title, just rimmed in and out years ago.
Dude, Indiana beat Butler this year on what was almost a half court shot. I went crazy.
Hail Mary, for some reason, feels fluky.
Tip, 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 catch.
It just feels fluky. It shouldn't.
Yeah.
Because a half-court shot now, I've watched my daughters lose a couple games on half-court shots, and it's horrible.
At what level?
Horrible.
Y-ball?
Sure, YMCA. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. Like, fifth grade, I think, Haley, in the championship game, they were up two, and this girl just heave-hoed it from past half-court. Whoop! In. They lost. It was like, just took all the air out of your lungs. Mm. I think I'm with you. I think I'll go half court shot. Hail Mary just feels a little fluky. Next.
Next Jerks. Question.
What muscle do you like flexing most? This person says, I've got world-class calves.
That must be Bob Stelton.
World-class calves.
You got a lot of muscles, don't you? Now, not anymore.
No.
He does.
When you did a certain weight loss treatment some years back, didn't Molly get kind of upset because you were too thin?
Been too lean.
Yeah.
Too thin, too lean. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, back in the day, it'd be the abs. Yeah, sure. You like to flex those abs.
How do you flex your abs? Don't they just sort of sit in place?
Huh. Well, Tom, I think that's a question that if you need to ask, you're never going to know the answer.
What do you mean, never?
Titus is in a little phase right now, though. I'm not going to lie. He's in a little phase where he's like doing the like the old school Hulk Hogan flex. Yeah, I'm starting to get some muscles. Like, yeah, you are.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Lady, a favorite muscle you like to flex?
My brain.
Oh, good for you.
Is a brain a muscle?
I think it's an organ.
I don't know. I don't care. I wasn't responding. I tuned out as soon as people were talking about calves.
That's right. Muscles, abs, all that nasty stuff. Hey, howdy. Ask Tom the same question you asked a professor this morning.
Oh, I heard about this.
Yeah. Can you ask him? I'm curious if Tom's got an answer.
Tom, who's one person that you know that will become a star or become extremely successful in this world that nobody else knows?
That nobody else knows?
They don't know of it yet.
It's just an unknown.
I mean, it's a tough question, right? Impossible. Clayton couldn't come up with an answer.
Couldn't answer.
Mm-mm. I mean, I assume our audience knows all of us, everybody right. in this building. Right. So that's not really. I can't say anybody in here.
Right.
I don't
Could
really
be a band that you've seen that you're like, oh, these guys are good.
No.
No real talent there.
I don't really know anybody outside this room,
they
really.
They got really harsh. I called out your name today. I didn't speak ill of you, but I called your name out.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it got real harsh. We're supposed to have this fun game of power ballads, and people pick out a power ballad.
Yeah.
And bless Lydia's heart, who spent hours putting together these lists, looked at all these lists. I trust her information, too, and her work ethic. She had them all. And just a bunch of, like, judgmental music, like, why is music so... It's not
so
a ballad. Why is music so... And I try to talk to you about it, and you're like... You give me the Longshanks answer, like, who am I to listen to this man speak of music? Why is it so judgy?
Because of what you just said. I don't want to get into that discussion with those people.
Why?
Because of what you just said.
Oh, because it gets too judgy?
Yes. Everybody thinks they know everything, right. And maybe they do, maybe they don't, but I just don't want to talk about it with them.
Yeah, I got you.
That's all.
Was it always so judgmental, music?
Yeah.
Probably.
It's a very personal thing.
Do you know what gets actually fought about more in church than anything? I'm going to give it away.
The music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the number one complaint, talking to different pastors, people that have run churches, like the number one complaints many times in churches is the music.
It was a holiday tradition, a Christmas Eve tradition, that when we left Mass when I was a kid, my dad would rant and rave on the car ride home about how bad the music was every year.
Old man Wassel. Not at Howdy's church, though.
Well, I guess because he's the one playing worship. The guitar.
Yeah. Crushing it.
Sometimes.
All things.
Next
all
question.
Jerks, what's the worst concert you've ever attended?
I think I've liked all the ones I've been to. Actually,
I've ever been to a bad one.
Some back-to-back limp answers on
have
these questions.
Have you ever been to maybe a concert where the opening act was like, "Oof, you're just trying to get
horrible.
Through that"?
Horrible.
What was that?
I don't want to throw those names totally under the bus.
I was.
Give us the genre. Genre? Was it country? Was it?
No, it was a Christian concert.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be
problems with Christian concerts too.
And they try to be like they had this band that tried to be like punk rock, and it's like what. What are we doing here? Like, I couldn't understand the words.
Later on, they went to become an MXPX.
Maybe.
Very successful. Shout out to the local guys.
Yes, I don't know. But
hey, Howdy, did you say limp answers?
Yeah. Very limp answers.
Well, you didn't have a star, a future star, Tom.
I'm trying to think of a substitute phrase for the curse word that's about to come out of my mouth. How's that for a limp answer?
This man takes 7 minutes of his time. He's busy preparing a show. We got an all-staff meeting. And you just rip them like that.
Limp answers?
How dare you? Then give us a good question.
I'll show you limp.
Give us one,
next question.
Give us one last good one here.
Jerks, if you wrote a power ballad, what would it be called?
Baby, I love you.
I Is that a 50s hit or is that?
It transcends time.
Should be called. That's amazing. Yeah, you can't.
You know what? I thought you would ruin this segment, and then you went and totally redeemed yourself.
Thank you. Brock, what instrument would you play?
Mine would be Every Cherry Has a Pit.
You just substituted Every Rose Has Its Thorn with another item that has two elements to it.
Sure did.
You go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself.
Every cherry has its pit.
Mike would not be happy if he were here right now with that answer.
Oh, no.
Why?
He would hate it.
Really?
He'd say, all right, that's enough. All right, let's move on. All right, coming up next, John Clayton. Ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Hey, and tomorrow.
That was the most amazing impression ever.
Was that salty?
Yeah.
Ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we got Al Michaels coming in. Got to talk to Brock.
It's in the barn. We'll see you tomorrow.
Kids trying to get to class in the morning, school, wife screaming in the house, love her to death, but it's a stressful morning.
Get to the chopper!